Good morning and welcome to the Friday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Today is the 22nd day of June 2018. As I squint to see the numbers on the computer screen and remember how old I am. My name is Peter Wickham. It's good to be with you on a Friday. Fridays are normally not the most exciting days for radio. We normally have a slow day, but I think that we're going to change that today. We're going to have some exciting conversation. Our call number is 434-1790. That's the usual number to call. This morning, your producer slash telephonist slash everything else is a gentleman called Mr. Dennis Johnson, who is well known to you. So the two of us are with you until 1 p.m. We're hoping to take some calls and some emails. Our email address, of course, is brassstacks@starcomnetwork.net. You can also feel free to reach us on the WhatsApp, 266-IVOB. So all of those are the facilities that you can use. This morning, no prefatory remarks from me. I want to get straight to the telephone lines and let's start to have some conversations. And I guess you heard enough from me on Tuesday. So for the second time, we're going to have some conversation. And if we have any low points during the course of the morning, then you'll hear some more from me. So we say good morning and welcome to the first caller. Good morning and welcome.
Hello, good morning, Mr. Wickham.
Yes, morning, sir. How are you doing? First up, welcome to the program.
Listen, last time you were on, you had a lady, I think she was right from Marshall, that she was telling you about the cooking. Remember we were discussing the cooking last week?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Her cooking for that area, Marshall, it would be George Spear, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. This is your minister was there for, how long is he in the house now?
Who, George Spear?
Yeah.
It's a while. What, right, okay. 30 years?
Yeah. Good. Now, this is the same minister that just said here recently that the people of White Hill was elected.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you were in the house for 30 years, as the last time the Barbados party was in power, you may have known when there's no time at all you could ever visit White Hill and finally find out the problems and try to solve some of the problems.
Mm-hmm.
See, I tell you already, Mr. Wickham, that I always prefer that girl cooking. It's flavor, it tastes nice, and it's romantic.
You're bopping that again.
Of course.
No, I mean, I believe that George Payne would argue that the issues of White Hill certainly presented themselves within the last 5 or 6 years. From what I recall, the issue of transportation and certainly the accessibility of that area manifested itself recently when there was land slippage. I am assuming also that his argument would be that the area was well represented, but he was not in a position to have done anything because he was not in office.
No, I talked about when the Barbados party was in office.
But you're talking about before the last 5 or 6 years.
That's right.
If the problems manifested themselves after the BLP left office, then what is he supposed to do?
No,
defending him, because you're entitled to make the point you're making.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Because I remember, even when the Barbados party always had problems down there, and they were continuing to have problems there. They might, what sort of engineer you put down there, that the soil down there is moved. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I admit suggestions. When Mr. Honorable O'Reilly was there, I called a member of the Barbados party and said it's best for y'all to move out those people. No, they got a problem solved once and all, and plant trees down there.
Mm-hmm.
But it was never taken up. But I always like that girl cooking. Mm-hmm. The other one is...
The problem you're having is that they ain't got a lot of people in Barbados that agree with you.
And people are cooking?
Yeah. And unfortunately, you can't win an election with 4% popular support. So
Don't mind. But you know, sometimes I might be...
You realize that there's a sex worker in Bridgetown that got 1 percentage point less support than she did.
Yes, but don't forget, if I have a
with a fraction shop, of the resources.
But Mr. Vickard, if I have a cook shop, you have a cook shop, I am doing some real nice cooking, but people don't like it. But the people got you who you do on the Saturday, you're very food or cuckoo and black pudding. So it's like people enjoy. I applaud you selling rum. They might not come to me. They might find your things more tasty.
Right.
It don't always work that way.
Yeah, but that's how politics goes. If it is that somebody like my food and not yours and they want me to cook for them, I can't be vexed with that. I mean, the problem is that you can't be vexed with it neither, but it is what it is.
Right. I told her that Eastman...
Sir, look, the reality of the situation is that I've had issues with Payne in the past. You remember that Payne was a gentleman who was in Parliament and didn't say anything for the better part of 10 years?
Of course.
And I had some issues. I remember I used to speak on this same program about the Thursday Club, right? But in the final analysis, he's demonstrated over time that he can win that seat again and again and again. And I'm saying that your best effort was put in 2008. And you lost.
Uh-huh.
Right? You didn't win again in 2013, and I think that the Democratic Labour Party was virtually obliterated in 2018. I think that this was the worst defeat. So I really think that for right now, you guys need to go back to the drawing board in relation
I'm no longer a member of the Democratic Labour Party. You keep repeating it all the time.
So you're what? You're a UPP now?
No. I told you I have my own little thing.
Okay.
I told you already. Right. I told you that we did not contest the last election, mm-hmm. but we are now putting our candidates in place so that we start early. As a matter of fact, I can tell this. We have a youngster now who will be coming. Well, I think he might not be ready anymore, but we already started some work since last Saturday. Mm-hmm. We work in Paris Gap, and this Saturday we have a young girl who will be running against the Prime Minister Barbès. Mm-hmm. This Saturday coming, I will be doing some work in Bushall area. Because the young people like it, the young people like what we are doing, and also we want to do things for St. Michael Northeast.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then.
Sir, I wish you all the best with your political career. All the best. Take care. This is Dr. Brass Talks. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Vickle. How are you?
And I'm good, sir. And yourself?
I'm cool for now, anyway.
I'm tempted to say that I'm blessed. Are you blessed?
Yeah, I am. I'm blessed, too. We talk about... I hear everybody talking about the bus fare and raise the $5, but my suggestion about bus fare, I feel that bus fare should get to at least $2.50. I don't know if you agree with me.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Minister of Transport agree with me. And the school children should pay at least $1 bus fare.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I want to say. That's my suggestion.
I don't disagree with you.
Yours and the Minister.
No, sir, I think it is inevitable that it will happen. I, like you, agree that something needs to happen, but I think that there's also a point that the capacity to pay has to be there. You know, there has to be a capacity to pay.
This is all I got to say.
Yeah, all right, sir. Take care. Good to hear you. This is Dr. Brass Talks. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome to Brass Talks. Welcome to back to Brass Talks. I just want to make a special mention. Sunday will be the 24th day of June 2018. This is a very special and important day for a good friend of mine, Maria Ben. Maria is an employee, of course. She is an officer with Her Majesty's Customs. Sad that we still call it Her Majesty's Customs, but anyhow, it is what it is. So Maria turns 50 on Sunday. And I had the distinct pleasure of turning 50 a few weeks ago. I hope that her 50 is as great as mine was. It certainly is an achievement, and I want to thank you. Maria has a special interest in education, and she has given me critical support over the years regarding various issues I've taken regarding education. We don't see eye to eye regarding foundation school, but I understand that that is one of the natures of life. So special birthday greetings in advance to Maria, who turns 50 on Sunday. Hearty congratulations to you. I can wish you all the best, many more happy years to come. Let's hope that we can celebrate your 75th, and then who knows. Dr. Brass Talks, good morning.
Good morning to you, Mr. Wickham.
Yes, sir, good morning.
How are you doing?
Okay, all right.
Good. Well, I want to let you know this morning that I have also joined the club 2 Mondays ago.
Oh, so you turned 50 as well?
Of course. I haven't went and applied yet for the BARP card.
But what are you waiting for?
Well, I will do it in the fullest of time.
Discounts await.
So I will, Peter. Now, I call it to discuss 3 different issues with you, but before I go into my 3 main points, I want to say just for the last caller say about the this whole issue with the $5 bus fare,
mm-hmm.
and that a conscientious government will not entertain the $5 raise in bus fare simply because, Peter, that if you have a young lady with 2 children who have to catch 4 buses a day, that works. So that $20, which is $100 a week in bus fare alone,
mm-hmm.
and if that person is working for $2.90 when the week comes. Yeah. You understand?
Yeah.
You understand? Now, I've been in touch with some of the guys who are PSV owners only yesterday, and what I've been told, coming from them, is that if the Minister of Finance, which is the Prime Minister, can tweak the 40 cents, the half of the 40 cents, that then it will not create the challenges that they are now complaining about. But that is up for consideration as it relates to things. If I had my way, I would tell them to behave first, but you can't punish individuals by taxation. So, that's the Prime Minister's call. But that was there. And when I look at it, it made a lot of sense to me. But the Prime Minister, who happened to have the public finances at her disposal, would be better placed to make those type of decisions. Mm-hmm. The next thing I want to say, Peter,
I want to say, sir, quickly, because I haven't commented on the bus fare thing. Look, the fact is that bus fares need to increase. But to say that what the IMS said was that bus fares, the cost of the service is about $5. To say that the cost of the service is about $5, it doesn't necessarily mean that people will need to pay $5. What it basically means is that there needs to be some kind of cost recovery that either comes to $5 or approximates. If government makes a decision that's going to subsidize it, then, you know, there would be a subsidy that would be put in. But the fact is that we have to appreciate that the value of the service or the cost of the service is $5. If we decide that there are mechanisms and ways and means of supplementing that $5, then, you know, that's a conversation that we can have. I should make the point, though, sir, that bus fares in, well, the Caribbean countries, I mean, in Trinidad and Tobago is per stage, you know, based on the length of the journey.
Yes, St. Lucia does I think Trinidad does it.
But when I look at bus fares in the United States, bus fares in United Kingdom and France and you know, various places that I go, generally speaking, it's in that vicinity. So the basic ride that you pay in the United Kingdom is about £2. In the U.S. is $2.40 or $2.30. At least in Miami, when you're going up a similar distance, it's about either $2.30 or $2.20, which is essentially four something. So technically speaking, ours are cheap. And I think the challenge for me is that the private operators don't have the cushion that the transport board has. And it encourages a lot of the guys into lawlessness, you know, in order to make that money. One of the challenges that we have to deal with regarding this bus fare issue is balancing the long and the short journeys. It is in the interest of an operator to go short journeys or alternatively to go long journeys where he can resell the seats. That's my understanding of it. The challenge is, how do you create a system where it's beneficial for a person to leave Bridgetown and drive to Half Moon Fort without picking up any passengers and be able to make money on that ride? And therein lies the problem. And people who suffer, especially the people who live in St. John and St. Andrew and those kind of places where there's nowhere else on that route that the bus is going, so to speak. You know, so.
Right.
Anyhow, it requires some thought. But we agree that it got to go up, but we also agree that the school children thing free, it can't work.
Yeah. I mean, I disagree with that from day one.
I supported it initially, but I realized that you could do that kind of thing when you got money.
Yeah. Right now we don't have that money. But let me move on, Peter. Mm. Now, I recognize I'm passing on the South Coast yesterday. Approaching the Esplanade up there in Hastings, where the old Royal Bank was. We're coming up from Bridgetown. There's a boardwalk there.
Dennis is just reminding me that it is Hastings Rock.
Hastings Rock. I realized, Peter, from when approaching Hastings Rock, though, that I'm now spelling Kentucky Chicken. Mm. Once before, that was not the case. So I think that
I hope you're not thinking about eating some.
No, the Minister responsible for Energy and Water Resources must be commended this morning for his efforts in shy of less than 3 weeks can have this issue arrest and partially solved to the extent now that you can smell Kentucky chicken on the way up. As in the past that was not the case. So I think that I must commend the Motley led administration for the hands on approach in handling this matter as it relates to the South Coast sewage mess. I want to commend them for it. Mm. Next thing I want to go to Peter now is the high rental cost that the previous government had engaged in for the last 10 years. If we are talking about saving money and we are asking for our citizens to come on board as it relates to the different measures that was placed in the presentation by the Prime Minister, I believe that all of those high rental cost buildings, such as urban and rural development on the bridge, where we are paying in excess of $65,000 monthly in rent, and the national the culture and sports over there at the Sky Mall location, where we are paying $45,000 in rent, I think that we need to get the old National Insurance Building up and running. My investigations, Peter taught me that the ducts inside there was the challenge. In other words, the air-conditioned floor.
Oh, the ducts. Yeah.
So
they had ducts that were quacking.
No. Through the entire system. I am saying, Peter, for the better part of 10 years, Urban and Rural Development Commission was on the bridge renting at astronomical cost. I believe, Peter, that if we put a system, a thing in place to find out what is the real challenges confronting the old National Insurance Building, get it up and running. Peter, if we bring people back into the city, you will have more economic activity if they come back to the city. Most of government ministries now, where people want to access during the day, Peter, must journey now to Warrens. That is nonsense. We have a lot of buildings in this country closed up that are owned by the state.
But sir, you want to turn back the clock?
No, Peter. What I'm saying, let us look at what it will cost to have them fixed. And one of the things I believe that the new administration can look at, Peter, is having a maintenance ministry that deals with the proper maintenance of government buildings. We cannot continue. You know, have the Supreme Court that we just built in, say, 10 years. We know going up that thing, renting space, office space up there for a court to continue its work, Peter, and a brand new court in less than 10 years. Peter, that's nonsense.
Right.
I'm saying the point I'm making, Peter, is that if we establish a ministry responsible for the sole maintenance of all of the government agencies and buildings in this country, we will bring to a minimum this large amount of spending that we are doing in rent. We cannot afford it at this time. Government needs to come out of them. Come out. We have buildings sitting down that are empty. Let us see what it is to have them fixed. Fix them and move the offices back into these locations and cut out the large rental fees that we are now having. Peter,
All right, sir, you said a lot. Let me give me a chance to respond. I do not support your idea in terms of moving government's businesses back into Bridgetown. I think that the decentralization of government services was something that was ideal. I'm fortunate to live in the Warrens area, so I have to admit it's really convenient for me, but I also appreciate that for many people it's less convenient. But, you know, Bridgetown was overwhelmed. The challenge is that we need to turn a corner in Bridgetown, and I think that there are two options that are presenting themselves. One is that the University of the West Indies, as I understand it, has been given control of the National Insurance Building and also the Mutual Building. The idea is that if they're able to populate campuses in Bridgetown, then that will bring some level of economic activity back to Bridgetown. So that's one. The other thing is that I'm told that there are housing initiatives, one of them which was started under the previous administration, that could very well be continued to bring real housing to Bridgetown, and not just housing of a lower income variety, but housing of a middle to upper income variety. Now, my thing is that Bridgetown has to evolve, and the evolution was started. It was started with Billy Miller, quite frankly. And, you know, we have green spaces and whatnot. So Bridgetown has evolved. And I don't know that we have to feel that there's a reason to go back or take government offices back there again in order to make Bridgetown what it is. The stage has been set. The buildings in Warrens, they're occupied, and that's that. So my thing is, let's find a different use for Bridgetown. Final word from you, sir.
No, but Peter, I'm going to my last one. Quickly. Right, and this is my pet. Except a lot of public servants don't like it, but it is one of my pets. I believe, Peter, going forward, if we seriously want to take productivity serious, that I believe, right, that all employment in the public service should be on a contractual basis. I believe so.
I support that too.
Three and five year contracts.
I support that.
And I believe that our target can be 2030, 2035. Yeah. And fills it
not,
in.
Not a maid, sir.
No, are they here?
Not a maid.
No. I'm talking about the high posts.
Right, not a maid or a clerical officer. But no. PSs, deputy PSs, senior technical officers, they should all be contracted.
Precisely. And that your contract will be subject to renewal based on your performance
of course.
Job. Yeah. You understand? And I can tell you, Peter, all this thing where I appointed and I this and I that, you will see that all of that behavior will go through the door. And that we will have proper...
What you do for a living?
I do consult as a Peter. I ain't got no big work, Peter.
No, it's not big work. It's not big or small work. It's just that I also agree with you. But I agree with you against the background of the fact that I haven't really ever enjoyed that privilege of having a job where, you know, every month you get paid and I have an indefinite contract. I think the longest I ever had an association with a place was UWA. And that was also a contract which was terminal and was terminated indeed. So I know what it's like. The challenge for me is that I think that people like yourself and myself who say this, it's a language that public servants don't respond well to. I'm interested in it because I noticed that in most developed parts of the world, that's a trend where people who are professionals have several jobs in one career, one lifetime. Right. And indeed, they don't see tenure as something exciting. They see tenure as something that straps them down. And they're interested in a job where you get a contract. You know, you can probably get a gratuity built into it at the end of 3 years. And then you move on.
But Peter, let me tell you quickly before I go. Let me tell you, I think where the fair lies with public servants is political interference. But my challenge to that will be simply this, and that is that the same way we have when we have our set the 11 plus exams and the curriculum, the papers are corrected in another location, and Bob that correcting Tom papers don't know who Tom or Bob is. Mm-hmm. We can employ the services of the persons who are making the assessment of the employment of the public servants as it relates to if the contract should be renewed or not.
Sir,
to have that in the hands of individuals who have nothing, no direct contact at all to the individuals or know of the individuals who were in these departments.
Sir, even so, the presumption that I need to be employed permanently, I need to be appointed to a post in order not to be fired, carries a presumption that I am not useful to my employer, right? I was employed by University of the West Indies. University of the West Indies sought to end that arrangement. I ended. And my point is that the University of the West Indies is worse off now. In my opinion, I don't know, they may think differently. But the reality of the situation is that if you have an opinion of yourself and if you believe that you're useful to an employer, regardless of which government is in office, they will determine, you know, what is best for them. And if they think that you are best for them, they will keep you.
So the
challenge is that a lot of public servants don't have that confidence to say, you know what, I know that I can do a good job regardless of who is in power. A lot of them believe that they're there simply because they have tenure and not because they have something to offer. Anyhow, I'll leave it to you to wrap up.
But Peter, I've heard, and let me wrap up with this, I've heard your good friend Dennis Johnson spoke about being in the chair for the last 20 years at And he haven't died as far as I know. The best of my information.
He
works under contractual.
And he's on contract, precisely.
So I don't understand where the fear lies.
Mm-hmm.
If you are prepared to perform, then you don't have to fear. I mean, yes, there will be in some instances you will have instances where people do that, but I don't think that will be widespread, Peter. I don't believe so at all.
Yeah. All right.
I don't believe so.
All right, sir. Thanks a lot for calling and chatting. Look, we have a number of questions that are being raised about this idea of a stage fare system. And I have a few people reminding me that we had a stage system in Barbados years ago. In Trinidad and Tobago, there's a stage system. And the question is that not one of the solutions to the problem? I know it can be easily introduced. But let me just say this. Many years ago, I had the good fortune of discussing this initiative with Wendell McLean. And Wendell McLean was saying, if you have a situation where all of the hotels are on the south and the west coast, okay, and you have people who live in places like St. Andrew, people who live in places like Chalky Monk and so on, and they want to work and offer services to hotels on the south coast, does a person's services who is working, who's living in Chalky Monk, is that person less or more valuable to the hotel on the south coast than someone who lives on the south coast or in Bridgetown? And the fact is that that person is no more or less valuable. They carry equal value. And his argument was that when Tom Adams came up with this idea of 25 cents, because that's where it started, 25 cents per trip. Can't imagine it was all that long ago that it was 25 cents per trip. When it started, his idea was that the person who lives in Chalky Monk should pay the same thing to get to work as the person who lives on the south coast, because the value is the same to the employer. The value is the same to the society in the sense that they both do work that's important for keeping us together. if you have a system that discriminates against someone who lives further, it also means that that person is less likely to want to live there. And you create a situation where everyone wants to rush to the urban centers because they're close to their work. And that basically is something which is a disincentive. And what I've noticed is that, for example, the bus fares in United Kingdom in London have moved closer towards that system where the bands have expanded. And, you know, for example, on buses, you can have a flat rate system in relation to some areas, because the idea is that if you don't do that, you will push everyone to want to live in a particular center. And that's not necessarily a good idea for development. So I support it. I support it because I think it's important that people who live in far-flung areas should be able to continue living there and still work in the major tourism sector or in major sectors of Barbados, regardless of where it was, and pay the same price, and not to create a disincentive for people to feel that they need to crowd the urban centers. The challenge is that if you're going to do that, you have to have some level of compensation. And what happens in the UK with their concessionaire system is that a concessionaire would have a mixture of routes, lucrative and not so lucrative, and they can balance one against the other. The challenge that we have in Barbados is if you have one bus, you're a single operator, you have one bus, and that bus runs on an area that is not lucrative, then you lose money and there's no one to appeal to have a recompense. So that is something that we need to work on. But that's my view on the whole idea of the stage system. I really don't like it, but I do feel it's something that we have to have conversations about how we're going to create a level of equilibrium to allow some of the private operators to also populate these long-haul routes that are not financially viable. This is Dr. Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, ma'am. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Mm-hmm. I called to respond to the, I think it's the first caller, something that the first caller said or something that you said.
No cooking food?
No, about Mr. P and St. Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
No, to the caller. I would like him to go back in the archives and check back and see when our pain and suffering start. I can ease his conscience.
And you use that word pain advisedly.
Not P-A-Y-N-E, P-A-I-N.
I know.
Good. Well, our pain and suffering start November the 22nd, 2014. Mm-hmm. And if he can recall, the Barbados Labour Party was not in power.
Right.
And I can boldly say if the Barbados Labour Party was in power, we would not be suffering like how we were suffering.
You would have had P-A-Y-N-E and not P-A-I-N.
Of course, and the B-L-P too. Because, and you said something that, I mean, everybody know it was all over the media. If Mr. Payne and the Barbados Labour Party was in power, we would not be suffering like this. Mr. Payne did a lot for White Hill and St. Andrew on the whole.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't elaborate. The same road that we're using now, you know, mm-hmm. that road was abandoned for years. For years, and they said it could not be fixed. And had not for Mr. Payne reopening Baxter's Hill Road, we wouldn't have nowhere to travel. We one had nowhere to travel. I work on that road. And let me tell you something. I heard you say that Mr. Payne hasn't said anything in 10 years, in the time that he
I just said that. I told you.
Sorry, let me rephrase.
Right. There was a period of time where he was not saying a whole lot.
Well, listen. We, the people of St. Andrew, put him there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was liaisoning with his people, though. He was... Mm-hmm. We used to see him. Mr. Payne is not the type of person that going to drive through where he glass roll up. Mr. Payne doesn't walk through. Mm-hmm. And the votes speak for it. Mr. Payne is a man that liaison with his constituents. He picks out no one to liaison with. And he don't drive through. He does walk through his constituency. Mm-hmm. And he represent us well. And every election, the votes speak for it. We don't just vote for Mr. Payne because we can vote for Mr. Payne. We vote for Mr. Payne because he's a class act.
Mm-hmm.
I can speak for the majority of St. Andrew people and the votes there to support what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Payne is not the person that you could go and say, you could call his secretary and say, I want to speak to Mr. Payne. You can walk in his office and say you want to speak to Mr. Payne.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Payne is not one of those MPs that is stuck up that, but see, I ain't speaking to you. Don't care who you are. He speak to you. He represent us and represent well.
Mm-hmm.
And I know St. Andrew, they got a lot of people in St. Andrew can agree with me. And I don't even have to go along that route because the votes speak for it. We see Mr. Payne. Mr. Payne is a person, he don't drive, he walks. So he not speaking in Parliament, didn't say much. They mean a lot to us, because he speaks to us. He speaks to us. We are the person that puts him there. He speaks to us. Mm-hmm. So that part to me, it doesn't really take no merits. But I want these people, when they're talking, they get the facts straight.
Right.
This is not even a month that the Barbados Labour Party has been in power. And already they're looking to, what here people is almost at the light at the end of the tunnel. Money was given from the catastrophe fund to do this road and they did nothing for us.
Right,
so I don't understand why they are saying Mr. Payne. Mr. Payne is a class act. Thank you and have a nice day.
All right, thanks a lot for calling, ma'am. You take a break and come right back.